Welcome back to the second hour. It's Open Lines, Issues, Etc. I say it often, but I hope you continue to remember that Open Lines is always, always about anything you want to talk about, although I will always bring something to the table. This is, I think we'll just do this our light version. You know, we have been talking about some very serious issues the last 2 days whenever we've done Open Lines on the purpose-driven life. Necessary, very necessary, but and things that cannot, you can't say, and I'll be, I hope no one gets upset when I say, there is a right and a wrong to this whole purpose-driven life thing. It's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of God's word. It's not just a matter of preference or, well, you just see it differently than I do. No. Either Rick Warren is right on the purpose-driven life and his teaching on heavenly rewards, or he isn't. And God's word answers the question pretty firmly. With that said, there are a lot of things that don't make any difference one way or the other when it comes to God's word, but they can be annoying. Like trying to get a hold of your pastor or trying to get a hold of anyone at church. I have occasion to call Christian congregations on a regular basis. You know, just to sometimes it's to connect with someone I know. Sometimes I'm trying to get travel information. I'll be preaching someplace. My experience goes in one of two directions, and very seldom does it deviate from either of these two directions. Either someone immediately answers the phone, usually the secretary, knows exactly where everyone is, takes meticulous notes of the phone call, and I get my call returned as quickly as possible. Or no one answers the phone. It rings and rings and rings, and then after about 14 rings, I get an answering machine that spends at least, and these are long-distance calls, folks, at least the first minute and a half giving me all the service times and the this and that and the other thing until finally I get the beep where I can leave a message. And some churches, if they have answering machines, obviously don't turn them on because it just rings and rings and rings. George Barna has found out that most churches aren't answering their phones. Oh, wait a minute. There is one other direction that I find almost as annoying as the unending ringing of the telephone or the minute and a half long answering machine messages while you're waiting to just say, please call me back. That is the voicemail system. We've got one here at the radio station, the voicemail system. Ours here does not shunt you through a ton of different options. I think, if I'm not mistaken, if you call any one of the numbers directly, you just get the mailbox there. I have called churches where I go through three presses of a button. I'm not wearing myself out here, but I'm calling to talk to somebody, and I end up talking to something. Three presses of a button before I can actually get to a person. You've done this, haven't you? You've called. Maybe it's a business. If you know the name of the party you're calling, please enter the first three letters of their name after the beep. And then you're doing the old telephone typo thing where you're trying to figure out what number corresponds to what letter, and you misdial, and then they'll say no such party exists. Or you'll get into the voicemail system, and you can't get to the person you want to talk to. In churches, I find this an odd development. The pastor is hidden, usually in the voicemail system, somewhere near the very back. You pretty much have to be a senator, a representative, police chief, or his wife to get through. Other than that, you're shunted off to this person and that person who will talk to you and pass your message along. So much for being seeker sensitive. George Barna, his latest research out at the end of January here, new research indicates that most Protestant churches have overlooked one important matter. Nobody is covering the phones. Based on attempts to telephone 3,400 Protestant churches randomly selected from across the nation in December, the Barna Research Group of Ventura, California, revealed that a human being could not be reached at 55% of the nation's churches. A human being could not be reached at 55% of the nation's churches. And it wasn't just one attempt. How did they do this again? Every church was called a minimum of five times during business hours, with one call made each day at different times of the day over the course of a two-week period. So they didn't just try once and then not get an answer. They tried at least five times over 2 weeks at varying times during the business day, each church. 3,400 Protestant churches. Now, if you know anything about research methodology, that's a large sample. Across the nation, across denominational lines. Overall, one out of every five Protestant churches, that is 19%, had neither a person nor an answering machine responding to calls. The phone simply rang without any response from each of the five separate attempts. One out of every six churches, 16%, had an answering machine responding to all five attempts. Still no person, just an answering machine. One out of every five churches, again 20%, had either an answering machine or no answer at all during the initial five attempts. If this was the response rate for, say, your local police, your doctor's office, heck, the local Jiffy Lube, you'd be a little concerned, wouldn't you? It's open lines, issues, etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. By the way, in the next hour of the program, Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute joins us for the first part. We'll be talking about a human cloning bill in Delaware, the first state. They are hoping to follow, well, sadly, hoping to follow New Jersey as a haven for human cloning. Wesley Smith will tell us about that along with some information on the assisted suicide movement. And then Gretchen Passantino, the Hajj, the annual pilgrimage to Mecca made by Muslims worldwide. And if one is a devout Muslim, one will make this pilgrimage once in their lifetime, if able. Began this week, Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action will join us in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. today to talk about the Muslim pilgrimage of the Hajj. It's open lines. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Barna did break down the lack of response according to denomination. Some types of churches were more responsive to incoming calls than others. The most responsive group among all those that were measured were the United Methodist churches. 64% of them provided a human response. National Baptist, 62%. Southern Baptist churches, 61%. Mainline churches, as a group, were also highly responsive, 63%. Now, by mainline, Barna usually lumps them together with the United Church of Christ, Episcopal Church, Evangelical Lutheran Church, United Methodist Church, Presbyterian Church, USA. 63% of them had a person answering the phones during the initial five call attempts. The churches that were least likely to answer the phone and provide any kind of human contact, Baptist churches other than the Southern Baptist or National Baptist, Holiness churches, Church of God in Christ, Christian Church of Christ congregations, Nazarene congregations as well. In all of those, we're all talking about around 60% of the time you couldn't get a hold of a human being. 62% of the churches that were called couldn't get a hold of a human being. Now, a lot of these churches are the churches that have the signs outside. We care about you. It's all about you. Yada, yada, yada. Unless you want to contact them by phone. People get annoyed when they try and call this program and they have to and the phone rings a little longer. They have to wait on the line a little longer. And I understand that because sometimes, like during open lines, we will leave people waiting on the line for a long time. And yesterday we had to leave people waiting. And then when at least that hour was over, you got to let them go. We go on to something else. And I understand the impatience there. What do you think about a church that just doesn't answer its phone or buries the person you want to talk to, generally speaking, the pastor, behind a labyrinth of voicemail and various other staff people so that you pretty much have to be a senator or his wife to get through and talk to him. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's just put it in the form of a question. Your reaction, your answer to this question: should churches have answering machines and voicemail instead of a live person, a receptionist, a secretary? Call them what you want, answering the phones. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And I'm not talking about outside of business hours, all right? We don't expect the phones to be answered there 24 hours a day, but during the normal course of the day. Oh, here's another question for you. Should churches cancel? We asked this before and no one bit. Should churches cancel worship for inclement weather? Ice, snow, it's winter. Give me your opinion on that. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Are these deep theological questions? No. Are they questions? You know, it does matter to people. Remember when we talked about what people should wear to church? And everyone says it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But inevitably, in the course of having that conversation during open lines, we'll have two or three callers saying, well, of course it doesn't matter. But of course, no, anyone who dresses less well than I do is not dressed appropriately. It doesn't matter, but, you know, I wouldn't go without a tie. Sometimes the things that we say don't matter do matter to us. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Do you remember back in, well, when was it that the Supreme Court decided that that Texas law, Lawrence, was unconstitutional? It was a Supreme Court case, Lawrence v. Texas. They said that Texas law about sodomy was unconstitutional. They knocked it down. Do you remember at the time that Justice Antonin Scalia warned in his dissenting opinion what this would mean? He said it was going to unleash a wave of challenges to state laws against other things, not just sodomy, but bigamy, same-sex marriage, adult incest, prostitution, adultery, fornication, bestiality, and obscenity. That's what he predicted. Well, guess what? In a federal lawsuit filed January the 12th involving a married couple identified as G. Lee Cook and D. Cook and a woman, J. Bronson, the Utah law against polygamy is being challenged, and it's being cited, Lawrence v. Texas, the Supreme Court's overturning of Lawrence, of the Texas sodomy law, is being cited as precedent. The logic goes something like this. If you cannot regulate private behavior such as sodomy in Texas, and that is unconstitutional, then where do you get off regulating private behavior in Utah like polygamy? The lawyer bringing this case thinks he's got a pretty good chance of at least pushing that door open a little bit. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, Donald is calling from Effingham. Donald, welcome to Issues Etc.
How do you do today?
Doing well.
Great. Wanted to comment about the not ability to get hold of a live voice when somebody calls church.
Yes.
I can understand some of the reasons not being able to do that. For instance, I pastor a church that we're not large enough to employ a secretary. And so between all my other duties, between visitation, hospital visits, and duties that I'm called upon, somebody's not there even all day during business hours. But we do have the answer machine, and I'm very diligent about returning those calls. Now, my church members, to help them out, I do have a cell phone, and my church members have access to me through my cell phone.
Do they make use of that, do you find?
Yes, sir. We average about 100, but my church, I don't have a problem with it being abused where they're, you know, bothering me. I don't consider it a bother, and they're pretty well respectful of my time. But they know that if they need me, if they go to the hospital, if there's some reason they need me to come by, they know that I do expect them to call. I welcome them to call me.
And I assume that it's also an open invitation to, if they can't reach you at church or your cell phone's battery's dead, they don't feel any compunction about calling you at home.
Right. They would understand that. And I just, and you know, then there are times when you're in your office and you're studying and trying to prepare for the services. Boy, doesn't it seem like that phone's going to ring when it didn't ring all day. And so there are some times when you need that, you just have to screen it. And, you know, and so I can understand that. And I do try and use the telephone to the answer machine to return calls, but it does help me screen calls from salespeople and, you know, things like that. And so I also, my people know that too, that while I am studying, I can hear the answer machine. And if there were an emergency, I would drop what I was doing and either answer the phone or come to whatever they needed me to do.
Well, Donald, sounds like you got things covered by way of being available to your people. Thank you very much. Let me ask you one thing before I let
yes,
you
sir.
Go. How's our signal out there in Effingham?
Weak with a little static, but enough to be able to pick it up and hear it.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, he's described almost precisely the situation I had when I was a parish pastor of a small congregation in Illinois. I'll be honest with you, folks. I was practically never at the church office. I worked out of an office in the parsonage. And even then, it was probably difficult to get a hold of me. People knew that if they wanted to get a hold of me, they called me either on the cell phone I had at the time or at home. That was the only way to get a hold of me. I have been at Christian congregations where the pastor will not take calls at home. The phone number is there, but he has a policy. I'm not going to take calls at home. I sure hope he's answering the phones at church. Barna finds that if you call a Protestant church, you're less likely than you are to get a hold of a human being. Let's go back to the phones here. John is calling from Fenton. John, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks very much. I'm a priest who is at the cathedral on Monday, and I just wanted to say on behalf of all of us that we were very honored by the presence of the president of the Missouri Synod at the installation of Archbishop Burke.
Oh, well, thank you very much, John. I appreciate the call and mention of that. We had a conversation with Helen Hull Hitchcock yesterday about the installation. One of the things that we did not mention because it was not pertinent to the conversation was the mention in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch coverage that Reverend Gerald Kieschnick was, in fact, at the installation of Bishop Burke. He's even quoted, and I think this bears repeating here, because remember the stories that brought Burke into St. Louis, of course, what had happened in La Crosse, where he had told priests, you're not going to commune pro-choice Roman Catholic lawmakers. Dr. Kieschnick is quoted as saying there in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch story, Archbishop Burke got off to a great start by making a clear stand against abortion, something that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has stood by Roman Catholics with from the start. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I have a pastor friend who says that, and I think I've said this several times on the air before, but so what? The Roman Catholic Church, when it comes to the life issue, is like the Hoover Dam, holding back this giant mass of floodwaters. And all the other churches are like the little village down beneath the dam. If the Roman Catholic Church ever gives way on the life issue, the rest of us are in for it. They are holding back in many ways, like that giant dam, holding back a flood. So we continue to pray and we continue to commend the Roman Catholic Church for its firm stance on life and even trying to keep house within its own house on that issue as well. I pray we all have that same kind of courage. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Well, here's the story about that Utah polygamy ban. There's a law against polygamy in Utah. And as a civil rights attorney, Brian Barnard is bringing a lawsuit challenging it, and he is citing as precedent the U.S. Supreme Court's overturning of the sodomy law in Texas. Some believe it might have a fighting chance because the Supreme Court has basically opened the door for this. And Antonin Scalia, at the time in his dissenting opinion, said, we're opening the door for this. Barnard has not disclosed his client's faith except to say that polygamy is, quote, a sincere and deeply held religious major tenet. Now, Utah's constitution bans polygamy, and a 113-year-old Supreme Court ruling holds that the First Amendment does not protect the practice. Maybe it's time to look at that one again. You know, for a long time, the Supreme Court said that sodomy, laws against sodomy, were constitutional. They changed their minds about a year ago. Utah Attorney General Mark Sterliff filed a friend of the court brief in the Lawrence case, arguing that overturning the Texas law would open the door to challenges of Utah's polygamy ban. Sterliff said that he believes the Barnard case is headed for the Supreme Court and predicted the justices would uphold the polygamy ban. Quote, we have a long line of cases saying that the institution of marriage is the bedrock of society. Therefore, states having a compelling interest in regulating and controlling marriage, he said. But you know, we're not far away from same-sex unions and gay marriage, and it's not a giant leap from redefining marriage to include that to redefining marriage to include a husband with more than one wife or a wife with more than one husband. Once you open the door, you've opened the door. Back to the phones. Jeff is on his... Oh, he's calling from his car. Jeff, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor Todd. I'm actually calling from my semi. The question I got is that the last caller was a Catholic priest that called in and saying that he was honored with President Kieschnick being there at the Archbishop's installation or whatever it was. Now, isn't that kind of on the same line as Pastor Binky being there in New York having prayer with the other religions and stuff like that?
You know, it might appear to be on the face of it, Jeff, but let me see if I can clear up the distinction. For those who aren't, who have not been following, there has been a case in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod stretching out back over the last 2.5 years of one of the church officials out on the East Coast who participated in an interfaith, interreligious service. He participated. He was not simply an attendee. He participated in it. Something unprecedented in the life of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, well, largely unprecedented, and something that, I'll be quite honest with you, quite sadly, was resolved in the wrong way. He was exonerated of practicing what theologians call syncretism, that is, mingling the truth of the Christian faith with other faiths. That's my opinion. I have no bones about it. It was resolved in the wrong way. Should not have been there. Or had he been there, in the best of all possible worlds, he should have made the Christian message far more clear than he did. When we come back, I'll explain the distinction between Dr. Kieschnick being at the installation of Raymond Burke and that. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you noticed in many churches today, the God you find is convenient and non-confrontational, a sugar-sweet pushover of a God? What's happening when God seems to be against you, when God seems to be your problem, when God seems to be your enemy? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for January is called When God Becomes My Enemy. Through this in-depth study of the Old Testament complaint psalms, you'll discover the truth about God in the darkest of times. To order When God Becomes My Enemy, call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on our Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, When God Becomes My Enemy. When you call or write, mention Issues, Etc., 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Parents that want to move their children out of failing schools by way of school vouchers would apparently have little hope under the current crop of Democratic presidential contenders. Stuart Shepard reports on a survey of the candidates, specifically over their positions on school vouchers.
The Associated Press asked the seven candidates for their position on school vouchers. Six are strongly opposed. The main objection, vouchers would take money away from public schools.
That argument is patently false.
Krista Kafer with the Heritage Foundation says when students leave with a voucher, they take only part of what's set aside for their education, and the school has one less child to support. She suspects there are underlying reasons for the opposition.
Historically, liberal politicians have opposed school choice. They receive a lot of funding from the influential and powerful teachers' unions, and they're not likely to bite the hand that feeds them.
We have great freedom, and that sounds like relativism, doesn't it?
At this Christian school, there are 1,700 students, but Superintendent Roland Dorenzo says if his state's voucher program ever clears the courts, there could be hundreds more.
Vouchers is a step in the direction to making Christian education affordable and accessible.
He says the biggest concern for Christian schools is the string attached to every dollar.
The phrase we've always used is we're cautiously optimistic.
He says while vouchers will offer parents more choices, there are still many unanswered questions. For Family News in Focus, I'm Stuart Shepard.
The one candidate that supported vouchers was Senator Joe Lieberman, and his endorsement was carefully worded. He said he supports them as experiments. The National Education Association, the nation's largest teachers union, strongly opposes voucher programs and also contributes heavily to Democratic candidates. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
We thank Reliable Heating and Cooling for being a corporate underwriter of AM 850 KFUO. Here's a few winter heating tips from Reliable. Don't let your furnace filters get dirty. Check the filters at least once a month, replace disposable filters, or clean the permanent ones whenever they do look dirty. Reliable Heating and Cooling performs routine maintenance, such as cleaning filters and humidifiers. 8463 Delport Drive, Reliable Heating and Cooling, 314-423-3535.
Is it a sin to complain to God? Find out with our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, When God Becomes My Enemy. For more information, check out our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The cost is $19.99 plus shipping and handling. When God Becomes My Enemy, an in-depth study of the Complaint Psalms, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy, issuesetc.org.
I remember when I first started getting really anxious about reading the Bible. This was in high school, and for a number of reasons, not the least of which there was a nice-looking girl at the church I was going to, and trying to be, sitting next to her in Bible class, trying not to look like an idiot. I would read my Bible intensely. Oh, the things we do for love. Coming across Psalms like Psalm 88 and just being completely perplexed. You know, I thought this isn't so bad. You start with Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, that's a little rocky. Numbers, there we go, back on our feet. Deuteronomy, then you do the history, no rocket science there. You get to the Psalms. Oh, and the Proverbs all seemed, oh, that makes perfect sense. Of course, when I was a teenager, I agreed with them only in theory. You get to the Psalms, like Psalm 88, you have placed me in the nethermost pit, in the darkness of the depths. Against me your wrath has pressed, and with all your breakers you have subdued me. You have caused my close friends to stay away from me. You have made me an abomination to them, imprisoned, so I cannot escape. Those are dark words. They don't sound like the words of faith, but they are. They reflect a very deep and rich theology, the theology of the Complaint Psalms. It's the subject of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, When God Becomes My Enemy. You can order the book. It's an in-depth study of the Complaint Psalms, every single one of them, verse by verse and word by word, by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy online at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, there's information on When God Becomes My Enemy. You can also visit CPH at two locations they have here in St. Louis, one at 3558 South Jefferson, and the other, where is that? Oh, yes, it's barely 100 yards from where I'm sitting here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. When you come in, when you call, when you write, mention issues, etc. We had a caller before the break. It had been mentioned by a previous caller to that, that the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Gerald Kieschnick, had been in attendance at the installation of Raymond Burke as the new archbishop in the St. Louis Archdiocese. And he's even quoted in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in the story that was covering the installation in yesterday's paper. One person called in commending him for, and I read the bit in the paper. The next person calls in asking, how is that different from what happened year and a half ago? Again, within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, where one of our leaders out in the East Coast participated in an interreligious service. Participated. The difference is participation versus attending. I tend to think of it in this way, and I think this is a pretty solid way of thinking about it. As a public event, a Christian can attend just about anything. You can attend just about anything. Within reason, of course. You wouldn't necessarily want to attend, say, when you were... you might have reasons not to attend as a spectator if they were throwing Christians to the lions. You don't want to give the impression that you're supporting this kind of thing, right? But as a public event, attendance is not a problem. Participation is a little touchier. When I was a seminary student, it was part of our education to attend different kinds of churches, Roman Catholic churches, Methodist, Presbyterian, on occasion. It was part of what we were assigned to do. So we could see what was going on here, especially for someone who had grown up like me, a Lutheran from the cradle. Seldom had opportunity to see anything different. Very informative. Participation is a different matter. The boundary of Christian fellowship is large, but it has its limits. So while it would not have been appropriate for, say, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to participate by way of, say, in the consecration itself, because that would have been participating in the rites and the rituals of a church with whom we do not have that kind of fellowship. It is not only permissible, but probably wise for him to attend. We've got open lines until 5 o'clock, and then we're going to be discussing assisted suicide and human cloning, in particular a bill in Delaware with Wesley Smith. We'll also be talking a little later after that with Gretchen Passantino about the Hajj, the pilgrimage that Muslims make. They're making it this week to Mecca. Why to Mecca? What do they do there? It's a strange thing, but according to the five pillars of Islam, if you're devout, you will do it at least once in your life if able. Now, I'm still looking for your response to those two issues. So churches have answering machines and voicemail instead of secretaries. In other words, do you have a problem with calling your church, trying to get a hold of pastor, or trying to get some information, and just getting a machine, a ringing phone, or no one at all? Do you expect a human being to answer the phones? Should churches cancel worship? That's the other question I'm still waiting for a response. Churches cancel worship for inclement weather. I served a little congregation in Illinois up in the rolling hills of the Illinois Bluffs, right? I could be there in 15 minutes. I think in the course of 9 years serving that congregation, we had occasion at least three times to cancel church. You just cancel church because the weather was so bad. It was generally due to ice. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that many of the parishioners couldn't get out of their driveways. And the roads were treacherous. More than once, pastor slid off those little winding roads up through the bluffs and had to be pulled out of the ditch. And I knew what I was doing, driving on that kind of stuff. But more than once, I slid off on my way up to church to put a sign up saying, no church this Sunday. I really didn't have to put the sign there because most people got the message that if it's going to be this bad, if I can't get out of the driveway, I bet your pastor's going to cancel church. And I did. Did I do wrong? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Give me a call on that or on the question of the answering machine, voicemail, or a human being answering your church phone. Barbara is calling from St. Louis. Barbara, welcome to Issues Etc.
I'm calling about the question of whether or not church should be canceled.
Yeah.
This Sunday, I have not lived in this state except since last Easter. Actually, I moved here Maundy Thursday. So I haven't driven in snow, ice, etc. for, over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I really wrestled because I wanted to go to church. And I struggled and struggled, and I finally realized, you know, God gave me a brain, and I really think that he wanted me to preserve it, not get it smashed into some tree when he knows my heart. Now, I was fortunate enough to be able to attend chapel on the campus on Tuesday, so I didn't have need to go an entire full 2 weeks between services. But still, I think there are times that what was it God made the Sabbath? The Sabbath was made for people, or I can't remember the exact phrase, but, you know, like David, when they gave him the showbread, what Jesus used that as an example.
Yes.
And I honestly think that when it is literally taking your life in your hands, God expects you to use the brain that he gave you. But I struggled with that. I truly struggled with that before I finally decided stupidity is not a virtue.
Yes, contrary to what many Christians seem to believe, stupidity is not a virtue. Thank you so much, Barbara. So in the interests of self-preservation, whether or not church was still going on, when we had our ice storm this weekend, Barbara said, I think I would rather live to go to church another day than die trying to go to church today. I think my wife and kids did that. I counseled them to do that. I wasn't here this weekend. I was, well, due to the weather here in St. Louis, I was stuck in Denver. And I talked to my wife early that morning, and she said, it's coming down, and it's sticking, and it's getting slick, and it's covering everything. And I said, don't leave. Don't go anyplace. I didn't have to tell her that, but I felt the need to tell her that. And it was Sunday morning. Don't go. Again, did I do wrong? I imagine someone might say, look, if you really trust God, you can trust him to get you to church and back safely, regardless of the weather. And don't you remember our ancestors who braved the high seas so they could have that kind of privilege to worship? And don't you remember your great-grandparents who would ride in horse and buggy for half a day to get to church just once a month and then back again? And there were wolves back then and cougars. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Someone was on the line. They didn't want to go on the air, but they did ask this question. How would you respond if someone said, we have to have church today because we've got a budget to worry about, and if for only this reason, we got to take an offering? My first response being, this might give you an insight into my personality, would be, well, then let your riches perish with you. If we really trusted God, we wouldn't worry about having to miss an offering. Don't have church just so you can pass the plate. Although I imagine that crosses a few minds, especially if it's a large church that's running a bit of they have liquidity problems, money flow problems. They get halfway through the year and they're borrowing money. Then they say, we can't cancel church. We can't afford to cancel church. Cindy's on the line calling from South County. Cindy, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi.
Hi.
Earlier this season, I had a little bit of pneumonia, so I went to church on the radio.
Describe that for me, if you would.
Well, this nice guy who goes to church like at St. Paul Hamel, and he told about, you know, the pastor and where St. Paul Hamel was, and then he gave the you know, the hymns and excuse me, and I could sing as loud as I wanted to, because sometimes I like to really, really sing loud, and sometimes it scares small children. And so, and they turn around and look at you, and so, you know, I don't want to upset anybody. So I could sing as loud as I wanted to, and I couldn't always follow along with the responses because I didn't know them. But I really enjoyed listening to them. The pastor had a good sermon, and usually, sometimes it was the vicar. This was at St. Paul Hamel. I sometimes listened to, like before that, I think John Temple was on in Ladue, the church in Ladue. I liked it. I got to sing, you know, during Epiphany, some Epiphany hymns that I couldn't go to church and sing because I didn't feel good. And I didn't want to give what I had to anybody else. And then my husband got it. So then we were both home, you know, with it, and it was wonderful. We listened to the radio.
Cindy, thank you.
Could I say something else?
Yeah.
You know, this is something that you, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod pastors, don't exactly understand. But in going to non-denominational churches, and if it's a very, very, very large one, especially charismatic ones, the pastors usually will not speak to you. They would never, like, return a telephone call.
Why is that?
Well, because they're afraid of you. And, you know, like, and if you read, you know, if you, because a lot of stuff that they're teaching is false, and if you pin them down on it, you know, it's, like, uncomfortable.
But, no, I see, this is so far outside my experience. You got to just explain this to me, that at church, can you get a handshake from the guy?
Usually that, but you really can't get any kind of, like, you know, like, could I ask you a few questions? I mean, that really sends them running, you know. They just don't want to, they'll press the flesh, but they will not, like, do a lot of eye contact, one-on-one kinds of things with you. They just don't. They don't want to answer questions. If there's any kind of big money push, and usually there are in those churches, you just don't have it. And that's what I was so grateful for. I can call my pastor at 7 o'clock in the morning. He's there. I can ask him any question I want to ask him. I can call you. I've talked to you. I've talked to seminary professors. I was flabbergasted.
Cindy, thank you very much. It's so far outside my experience. We're talking about whether or not when you call the church, you get a human being. And I laid out one of my pet peeves about getting lost in a labyrinth of voicemail, and the pastor is completely inaccessible. He shunts you off to this person and that person to talk to them instead of the one you want to talk to, which is the pastor. Maybe the people just don't rate. Maybe they just don't rate. Maybe if you were the CEO, a big giver, the pastor would take time to talk to you, or one of his inner circle, his chosen few. But other than that, you know, just be happy with getting to occasionally glance at him through the crowd. Back to the phones. Karen's calling on from her car. Karen, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I hope you can hear me. We just had a discussion, a few of us that made it to church on Sunday, and we wondered if there was a Rams game. Hello?
Yes. Karen?
Hello?
Karen, are you still there?
I'm sorry, I can't hear it.
All right, well, I think I get the gist of it, though. Oh. You know, it's such a shame, Pastor. We're not going to be able to make it to church because you know of the snow on the ice. And Pastor can hear on the other end of the phone, if, by the way, they can get a hold of the pastor when they call him that morning, he can hear the game in the background. It's a shame. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Was it the Rams game? Now, this last weekend, I understand it was pretty treacherous in places. So, I don't know. Although, we're always looking for some excuse, aren't we? Would you brave the weather for a Rams game? How well attended was that? Or, I can't go to church, but I've got to go to the grocery store. I mean, there's plenty of food in the house, but you know, we grocery shop on Sunday, so we can't make it to church, but we will go to the grocery store. And while you're out, would you pick up some videos and then run by the McDonald's and bring back some food for the kids? That car works pretty well on ice and snow, as it turns out. Boy, I wish I would have known that this morning when we weren't going to church. Too bad. Claire's calling from her car. Claire, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor. I just wanted to say thank you to the KFUO staff who was manning the station on Sunday. Thank you for the Bible class. Thank you for the music. Thank you for the services that were preached on Sunday that we could hear. Thank you for the Lutheran Hour. Because of the weather, we had to choose to stay home. It was not safe for us to travel. And we appreciate everybody who was there serving us.
Claire, thank you very much. Let me tell you who you can also thank. I could put a name to the guy. St. Anthony Hicks. Tony Hicks was here the entire day manning the station on Sunday while the rest of us were all iced and snowed in various places. And he brought those things to you through his nimble fingers, so you can thank him for that. Now, before I go on, I do need to say something about not allowing the radio to become a substitute for the church. There are times when it's necessary that the only contact a person is going to have with the preaching of the word may be through the medium of radio. A person who's shut in, a person who is in a nursing home, that is perfectly understandable. When I was a parish pastor, I had my shut-ins, and then I had my shut-ins with the little quote marks floating in the air. People who weren't really shut in, they just didn't come to church, so I went and saw them. It cannot ever be a permanent substitute, but we do need to give thanks to God that it's another medium by which the preaching of the word can reach people when they can't reach us. Gail's calling from St. Charles. Gail, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling about the fact that the church that I attend in De Pere, I live in St. Charles, it was not canceled on Sunday, and we were so glad because my husband and I are taking instruction classes there. And we wanted to make our class so desperately. And when we went out to get in our car, we had to leave it out. We have a very steep driveway. It was encased in ice. But we were going to make our class at 9:30 no matter what. We got to church, and there were a few people there. 8 o'clock apparently wasn't bad. The 9:30 service was a little bit down. By the 10:45 service, when we were able to go, we only had about 20 people there. But it was the sweetest service there was, and I was so glad that the decision was made not to cancel church because it just gave us an opportunity to have that sweet moment, kind of alone with the pastor almost, it felt like.
And that's a rare thing at that church, Gail.
I'm sorry?
That's a rare thing at that church.
Yes, I know. I know. That's why it was just a real sweet moment. And so, you know, whether people can make it or not for whatever reason. I couldn't have made it if I had to get up my driveway. It was a sheet of ice if we hadn't put the car up. But whether they can make it or not, the fact that the doors were still open for those who wanted to try, I really appreciated that. But I want to know, since it's open lines, if I could ask a question really quick.
Absolutely.
I want to know, since I have done a lot of study on the end times, I just want to know how much as an amillennialist point of view, how much of the events that are laid out in Revelation do you think either have already happened or will happen? I'm a little bit confused, and I know it's too long to go into a lot of detail, but just a little bit.
Okay, yeah, I think I can give you a basic answer there, Gail. And I agree with you. If one person shows up, pastors, they're putting the sign on the board that says church canceled today, and one person shows up, then that's enough. Two or three gathered in my name, that's enough. It might not be the full-blown service. The organist might not be able to make it. Who knows? It's enough. It's enough. All right, we do have, let me see, I'm going to make an executive decision here and say that I'm going to ask those who are holding on the line to be patient with me. We might run up against the break, but I will extend open lines a little bit into the third hour of the program, and we'll push our guests back just a few minutes there so I can get an answer to Gail's question in here thoroughly. The amillennial viewpoint of the end times does not teach what it sounds like it teaches. It sounds like it teaches that there is no millennium. There is no reign of Christ. The amillennial viewpoint says there is no literal thousand-year earthly reign of Christ after a tribulation and a second and a third coming, things like that. The things you read in the Left Behind series. Not a literal thousand-year earthly reign of Christ. The millennium begins at Christ's resurrection and ascension, when he ascends into heaven and begins to reign and put all things under his feet. And it lasts not 1,000 years, but eternity. It overlaps with time and goes on into eternity. That's what the symbolic number 1,000 means there in the book of Revelation. So we teach a millennium. We just teach a bigger and better millennium than everybody else. How much of the book of Revelation has already occurred? Well, up to the second coming of Christ and the advent of the new heaven and the new earth, everything. I am of the opinion, and I think it's a solid opinion, especially reading the scriptures through the lens of the cross, that the book of Revelation is telling the story of salvation history from beginning to end, culminating in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's telling it again and again and again. Three times it tells the story. It tells it in terms of a scroll being opened and the decree of God being read piece by piece. It tells it in terms of bowls of wrath being poured out one by one. It tells it in terms of trumpets being sounded one by one, all of them culminating in what has not yet happened. And that is the return of the one who says, "I am coming quickly." That has not yet happened. The resurrection of all flesh and the day of judgment of all flesh standing before the great white throne has not yet occurred. Although the day of judgment has occurred in a sense when Christ was judged in the stead of the world at the cross. But that's just the beginning. The day of judgment, the final verdict, has yet to be rendered over each and every individual when Christ comes again. Has the tribulation occurred? You bet it has. I think the apostles are quite clear that the tribulation began the minute the church breathed its first on Pentecost, no more than a week after they're preaching Christ and his resurrection and are bringing in 3,000 souls. They're being dragged before the Sanhedrin for performing miracles in the name of Jesus. They're in prison. The tribulation begins. It continues. The tribulation and the millennium actually are concurrent events. One has an end, the tribulation. It comes to an end. These are they that came out of the great tribulation. They've washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. That includes you and me. The millennium runs at the same time from Christ's ascension into heaven, but doesn't have an end. It's an eternal kingdom. And we reign with Christ even now. We don't see it, but we do. How so? He's named us kings and priests of our God. That's the short answer. When we come back, we'll continue opening lines with your phone calls in just a few minutes, and then we'll be talking with Wesley Smith. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.